What am I willing to do to go get it? I push things aside just to go get it. I know my role and I play my position. You talking too much. Please learn how to listen. I never give up. I'm not quitting.
Welcome back to the YI Network, where we interview every job occupation, A through Z, from the trash man to the CEO, and ask them why and how they started their profession so that you can find your dream job too. I'm your host, Kojo Thompson, and today we have a very special guest with us. It is Jared Pope. Now, Jared began his career practicing workplace benefits, HR and compensation law, but after the rise of the Me Too movement in 2017, Jared realized industry standard practices and the system were entirely broken. So Jared knew he had to improve the system and created WorkShield. So Jared has a lot to share with us here today. So Jared, shall I proceed?
Yes, indeed.
All right, Jared, how are we feeling today?
It's a beautiful day today. I feel awesome.
Perfect, perfect, perfect. And Jared, I'm going to have to go ahead and ask the question that everybody has been waiting for. Drum roll, please. And that is, why, Jared? Why did you create WorkShield?
You know, I'll always love getting that question. And it comes down to two things. One, when the Me Too movement started, I pondered the question of why is this happening? Why aren't these issues solved? Why are these issues continually going up in the paper, going up in the newsroom, Twitter, Instagram? Like, why is this happening and what's the problem? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I looked in the mirror and I said, I'm part of the problem. And I'm part of the problem because I'm an attorney, or was I'm what I say today is I'm a recovering attorney. And so, and I was part of the problem because clients and companies would put in these policies and procedures, check the box policy, check the box procedure, mm-hmm. and they weren't really implementing them to really hear the voice of the employee. Mm-hmm. But also they weren't implementing them to really hear the voice of their culture. Mm-hmm. And so that was number one. And then number two, I looked at my daughter and my mm-hmm. wife, and I said, I have a daughter, Madeline. She's 11 years old today. She's a firecracker, love her to pieces. Mm-hmm. And I said, what kind of world do I want for my daughter to grow up in, mm-hmm. to where if she's working for a company, if she's working for a large company, small company, at school, not at school, out and about, mm-hmm. you know, do I want her to be subject to any harassment, discrimination, violation, workplace misconduct? Mm-hmm. But then also looked at my wife and said, what did she have to go through? Mm-hmm. What are the things that happened to her that maybe she was too scared to raise her voice? Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I also said, looked at the other side of it and said, what about the people that are just raising their voice to try to get people in trouble because, oh, they didn't get an assignment, or, oh, they wore red socks and the other person likes yellow socks. Right. Mm-hmm. So I looked in the mirror and said, okay, there's a broken system. Mm-hmm. So how can we fix it? Mm-hmm. And how do we make the world a better place? How do we make culture a better place? How do we make the employer have a culture that allows voices to be heard while at the same time protecting the company, the culture, and the employee all at the same time? And I just sat down after looking in the mirror and started pondering and thinking, okay, what's the system today? How does it work? Okay, where are the flaws in that? Where is there an opportunity to find the ability to fix that broken system? And through that thought process, research, looking at what I was doing in my days as an attorney, the solution came to mind. Mm-hmm. And that was WorkShield.
I love that answer so, so much. And first off, I can relate to the first part that you said. The first thing you said was you looked in the mirror you looked in the mirror. And that is how I started this podcast myself. So I can definitely relate to looking in the mirror and sizing yourself up and asking yourself those important questions. Then after that, he found the problem and then researched into how he could solve the problem. So if anybody is out there listening, trying to start whatever they want to start to help others, please do your research and find your niche, your alley that you can help others in the most efficient way possible. So Jared, I absolutely loved that answer right there. And I'm going to have to ask right now, you're at the top of the totem pole. You're at the height of your game. Take us back down to the bottom. Step one, day one. What was the process like that brought you here today?
Well, it's a funny story. And I got an email from a friend of mine, and it was about this attorney out of California in this law firm. They were going to start this employer reporting process. Mm-hmm. And at the time, this lady was a client of mine. Her name is Laurel Legler, and she's an amazing individual. Mm-hmm. And actually serves on our advisory board today, because if it wasn't for her email, it might not have started. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, read into the email, looked at kind of what they were doing. And what they were doing was trying to offer this health, it's called an HRA, this health reimbursement arrangement, to where if someone did experience that harassment or discrimination, they could mm-hmm. go seek psychological counseling. They could go seek, you know, types of medical type issues, and the company would pay for it. And they called it the Workplace Harassment Intervention Prevention Plan. And they called it the WHIP, which is a horrible name to go to employers with. And I said, okay, first off, number one, attorneys generally aren't that creative. And when they try to be creative, it's usually not that great. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, that's not the solution. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I thought about this idea because 99% of the companies out there have some process to where they say, if you've been harassed, discriminated against, you feel like there's a workplace misconduct issue, mm-hmm. go to your employer, HR, go to your manager, supervisor, or go call that anonymous hotline, mm-hmm. which is fine, but guess where it goes back to? Mm-hmm. The HR, manager, supervisor. Mm-hmm. And when that dawned on me, and then the research said, look, 75% of the people that experience harassment or discrimination don't report it due to fear. Mm-hmm. And that's the fear of retaliation. That's the mm-hmm. fear of being ridiculed. That's the single mom who's got two kids that can't really take a day off or lose her job because she's got rent to make. Mm-hmm. Is she going to raise her voice? Well, no, because she's afraid she's going to get fired. It's going to be swept under the rug. Maybe she gets ridiculed, mm-hmm. or maybe she doesn't get the right shift so that she can pick up her kids from school. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I said, well, it's no wonder that 75% of the people don't report. Mm-hmm. So how do we remove that fear? Mm-hmm. But more importantly, how do we remove the toxicity? And so being an attorney and understanding the way it works, I said, okay, I think I have a solution. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to work. So this idea was, hey, we're going to build out this technology platform. We're going to allow people to report, allow their voices to be heard. But instead of sending it back to the employer to say, hey, here's this issue, you got to go solve it, mm-hmm. we're actually going to do the whole investigation. Mm-hmm. We're actually going to come up with the solution, partner with the employer and say, hey, here are the facts, here are the issues. Let's solve the problem. How do you want to solve this? Mm-hmm. And what that did in my mind at the time was saying, hey, you're now removing that employer from being stuck in the stickiness, the mm-hmm. drama, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. You're removing them from that situation. So I said, okay, I think I got an idea. I think it's going to work. Mm-hmm. So that started in November of 2017. So fast forward a few months, I'm now in January, I'm thinking about these issues, you know, I'm staying up late at night, you know, I'm doing my day job, but at the same time, I'm like building out this kind of website, I'm building out this process, these models, how to work. And so I go to Chicago and I visit a client of mine, and I was invited to this client year after year. They had this big team building event in Chicago. And that company was a company called the Plexus Group, and Walt Fawcett, He's the owner of the Plexus Group, big mentor of mine, learned a lot from him. And I looked up to him and still do today. He's got a lot of insight, a lot of sage advice. Mm-hmm. And look, I'm an entrepreneur at heart. I've ran a lot of ideas by Walt, and he's been the first one to say, that's a stupid idea. That doesn't work. No, this mm-hmm. is why it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, okay, I'm going to run this idea by Walt. Mm-hmm. So we're at a dinner. We're hanging out. And I say, hey, Walt, I got an idea. And he kind of goes, okay, Jared, what is it? Mm-hmm. And I told him, and I said, hey, I'm thinking about starting this company called WorkShield. This is what it's going to do. This is the process. And I'm going to commoditize the legal services, but put it behind some technology. It's a platform. We're going to be able to capture data, but then really help companies to where the executives or the companies, you know, they don't find out about this stuff when it hits the newspaper. They actually know about it right away. And it gives them an opportunity to remove the toxicity, to solve it right mm-hmm. when it happens. Mm-hmm. And more importantly, where national average is 30 days to solve an issue, mm-hmm. I'm going to do it in less than 5, mm-hmm. 80% faster. Mm-hmm. And he literally sat there and he looked at me and he goes, I love it. I'll be your first client. Mm. So I'm like, okay, now my juices started flowing. I'm like, okay, this is good. This mm-hmm. is good. Mm-hmm. So that was on January 30th of 2018. Mm-hmm. January 31st, still in Chicago, have dinner with another client of mine in Chicago, a guy named Ed and Andy. And they run a company called Cornerstone. And have dinner with Ed and Andy. And I'm like, you know, I'm going to pass it by them and see what they think, because they're pretty sharp guys. They have a pulse on what's happening in the market. And so I said, hey, Ed, Andy, I have this idea. It's called WorkShield. Mm-hmm. Walk them through the process. Guess what they said?
What did they say?
Hey, I'll be your first client. So at that point, boy, I was ready to get home. I called my wife, Jennifer. I said, hey, I got some good news. I'll be home tomorrow. I'm flying mm-hmm. in. So I got home the next day, walked through the door, and I said, Jennifer, remember WorkShield? And she goes, yeah. And I'm like, I need a logo. I'm starting the company. Don't worry about it. Let's pull up the logo. I got the website going. I'm starting mm-hmm. it. Mm-hmm. Full guns blowing. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, that's how it started. Mm-hmm. And we started, our official start date was February 18th, 2018. Mm-hmm. And so we just turned 4 years old. And so that was the impetus. So it really came from three people. Mm. It came from the first email from Laurel Legler, who emailed a guy at the Plexus Group called Mitchell Andrews. Mm-hmm. Mitchell Andrews sent it over to me and said, hey, what do you think? Mm-hmm. Well, then it came from Walt Fawcett and Mitchell at the Plexus Group, and then Ed and Andy at Cornerstone. And they were really kind of the friends of mine, mentors of mine, colleagues of mine. Mm-hmm. And I'd already passed it by through one of my best friends named Travis as well. Mm. And that just solidified it. And mm. I said, okay, I think I got something here. Mm-hmm. I think this is it. Mm-hmm. And that's how it started.
Mm-hmm. I absolutely loved that story right there. I absolutely loved it. Now, Jared, I know I just asked you to break it down for us, but what I want from you now is to go back even further than that. What were some childhood hobbies and habits that matriculated into what you're doing today?
You know, there's always one part of my life that I realized that it was going to help me above anything else. Mm-hmm. And so, look, I grew up with a single mom, twin brother, and an older brother, and always had to work hard. And so didn't grow up with a lot of money. Definitely were scrapping for food and bread from that standpoint. Mm-hmm. And so had my first job when I was 13, mm-hmm. Actually 12 years old. Mm-hmm. So I bused tables. I was a back office or back restaurant, wash dishes, 12 years old. I was so excited. I got paid $5 an hour. And I thought I was rich. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I'm like, man, this is awesome. I'm going to be able to buy clothes for school, mm-hmm. all this stuff. So mm-hmm. I've worked a lot, but there was one job in particularly. And so having that work ethic young, and I was a runner, I ran track and field and cross country and played sports and mm-hmm. went to TCU mm-hmm. and ran track and field and cross country there. But there was a job that started my first summer at TCU.
Mm-hmm.
And it forever changed me.
Mm-hmm.
And that job was, I sold books door to door for 3 summers in a different state. So I grew up in Granbury, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
I first sold books in Russellville, Arkansas, and then went to Macon, Georgia. And then up to my third summer, I went up to the New Hampshire, Vermont area, Massachusetts area. Granby, Massachusetts was my area. But I'll tell you this, selling books door to door back in, this was in 1997, 1998, 1999.
Mm-hmm.
So on my own. And one of the things they always teach is control what you can control.
Mm-hmm.
Don't worry about anything else. Mm-hmm. And at 19 years old, off in a different state, selling books door to door, trying to make money.
Mm-hmm.
And my first time I was there, I had a girlfriend and she kept calling me during the summer. And my very first 3 days being out in the field, I made 0 sales for 3 days straight.
Mm-hmm.
So knocked on the first door at 8, knocked on the last door at 9:30, 10 o'clock, back home. So 3 days straight, long days, lugging a 40-pound book bag around saying, let me sell you these books.
Mm-hmm.
0 sales.
Mm-hmm.
So I called my girlfriend at the time and I said, look, you got to stop calling me. I was like, I'm out here to pay for school. I'm out here to get better myself. Mm-hmm. And look, you either got to stop calling me or if you're not going to, if you're going to keep calling me, I'm telling you right now, we're breaking up. And so I broke up with her. And for the summer, I said, don't call me. I'll call you when I get back to Granbury or Fort Worth, back at TCU.
Mm-hmm.
The next day I was focused. I controlled what I did control and I made 4 sales. And the rest was history. And everything I look back on today, it always goes back to control what you can control and don't worry about anything else. Because I knew selling books, if I could show my books 30 times a day, I would at least get about 6 or 7 sales. Okay. And sure enough, those first 3 days, I wasn't controlling what I could control. That's why I had 0 sales.
Mm-hmm.
I was worried about other things.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, were people going to make fun of me? Were people going to laugh at me when I knocked on the door? I'm sweating, you know, I'm all of 119 pounds because I'm a long distance runner selling books door to door, lugging around a 40 pound bag. Were they going to laugh at me? I threw all that out the window. That fourth day, I don't care. I'm going to control what I can't control. I made some sales that next day and the rest was history. And I ended up that summer out of 3,000 first year students. I was number 18 that summer. And it all came back to control what you can't control. Don't worry about anything else.
And there's a constant piece of advice that I always try to tell everybody on each piece, on each interview that I do. And man, if he did that, just emphasize the point right there, then I don't know who else did. Please, guys, please do yourself a favor and stop worrying about what other people think about you. Please do yourself that favor and stop worrying about what other people think about you and get out there. Your confidence is going to skyrocket immediately once you stop caring about what other people think about you. As long as you get out there and you're doing your thing, you are going to be A-OK. And I absolutely loved that answer right there, Jared. Now, what's an average day like for you today?
Well, an average day sometimes is you never know what an average day is going to be like. And so and that's with any, you know, startup company. And that's what I love. But look, first and foremost, my family is important. So I got a wife, Jennifer, 2 kids, Madeline, who's 11, and Harmon, my son, who's 13. And that's first and foremost. So family's first. So, you know, look, usually waking up 5 a.m., get up, answer emails. That's what I call my quiet time, to where no one else is interrupting me. That's what my most creative time is, meaning I can sit and think and okay, what about this? I can get creative. Those are when my creative thoughts, process, ideas, how do we make the company better? But also the alone time. I make my cup of coffee. I sit down. I do that. And then look, get up. My wife, Jennifer, gets up. We talk. We have a cup of coffee. We talk about the day, what's in front of us. What about yesterday? Catch up on some things because she's my co-founder.
Mm-hmm.
And so we talk about some of the things about the company. What about the kids? What's coming up? And then it's literally in the office. So we're, you know, I know with COVID and everything else, we're probably one of the few companies that said, okay, everybody back to the office.
Mm-hmm.
Because as a startup, I really believe that there's a book called Zero to One.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to get to one from zero, some of this relates to, look, there's certain things you can outsource, mm-hmm. but you have to be present. Collaboration mm-hmm. is key.
Mm-hmm.
And collaborating over Zoom or it can be done.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like that human interaction collaboration that is required sometimes to get to that next level, to get to that one.
Mm-hmm.
And so brought everybody back. And so we've been in the office for a while, but the moment I step in the office, it's go, 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 go.
Mm-hmm.
And one of our things is we're going to collaborate. We're going to go fast
mm-hmm.
and we're going to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And that means, look, we're decisive. We make decisions and we pull forward.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so average day for me after waking up, getting to the office, usually have a couple of meetings. I meet with the co-founders. I meet with our team, usually early in the week, meet with our sales team.
Mm-hmm.
What's happening? What can I help out with? What mm-hmm. do we see coming up this week? And then it's usually, okay, how do we scale? How's our technology? How are the development? Are we going through a SOC audit? Are we, what can I do to help out with the demo?
Mm-hmm.
How do we get to that next level? And mm-hmm. then it's talking with investors, board meeting, board members from our company, trying to just push the company forward with what I can do. And now what I've really done is there's kind of three areas, right? It's the why, the how, and the results. Mm-hmm. So I'm really out of the how. You know, that's the more I get pulled into the how, the less that I'm using my strengths for the ability of the company.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we have such a great team. Mm-hmm. So if it's related to the how something is done, that's for my team. Mm-hmm. But the why we're doing it and the results of it, that's what I'm focused on. Mm-hmm. You know, what's our why?
Mm-hmm.
Our why is, our goal and why is, we protect companies, employees, and cultures all at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Period in the story.
Mm-hmm.
That's our why. And if we're able to provide a safe space for people to speak up, but ensure that they're going to be listened to and there's a clear path to resolution, mm-hmm. we're better than anybody else in the market.
Mm-hmm.
Hands down.
Mm-hmm.
And so, so that's my day to day. And so let's take today. I got a meeting after this, got two more meetings after this. I got a lunch with the client. Mm-hmm. To talk about how we're doing, what can we improve on,
mm-hmm.
how are your results,
mm-hmm.
what can we do better,
mm-hmm.
what do you like, what do you not like, and then it's back to meetings, and then usually till about seven or so is when I'll work, and then I'm focused on the family after that. Then when they go to bed and are ready for that, mm-hmm. Harmon, he's 13, he has a lot of homework, same with Madeline,
mm-hmm.
I go back to my homework,
mm-hmm.
and my homework is, okay, what's, and I always ask myself before I go to bed, is there a next step you can take right now that you can do tonight before tomorrow morning?
Mm-hmm.
And if that answer is yes, go do it.
Mm-hmm.
Just one thing. If you can do one thing and answer yourself, what can I do next? What is the next step for this? Can I do it right now? Is there something I can do right now instead of pushing it off to tomorrow? Just one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? That right there, controlling what you can't control, it's amazing how many people are up at night and you grab their attention like that because they see an email from you and they're like, oh, this guy's working. This team is working.
Mm-hmm.
They're pushing it to the next step.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing what happens after that.
Mm-hmm. I love it. I love it. I absolutely love it. Now, Jared, what do you enjoy the most about what you do?
You know, I love people. I love talking to people. I love sharing stories.
Mm-hmm.
I love listening to stories.
Mm-hmm.
I love listening to other people.
Mm-hmm.
I love hearing how they achieve their success, how they came back from failure.
Mm-hmm.
how they were knocked down, how did they get back up, what did they learn, what was their experience. And with my job, I love this kind of pushing it forward. What can we do to push it forward? And, you know, look, I was a miler, and I also know my strengths and my weaknesses. Okay. And that's one of the key things. You got to know your strengths. You also got to know your weakness. So being a miler in college, so ran for TCU, and, you know, always equate things. The first lap I was really good at. The second lap I was good. The third lap, that wasn't my best. But my fourth lap, you know, with like 500 meters to go, watch out. Because I'm going to kick it in. And it was really between that 1,200 meters or that 800 meters, 800-900 meter mark, all the way to about 1,100 meters. That was my worst part of it, because I would lose a little bit of focus. I would get over the halfway hump and they'd be like, okay, I got halfway left to go. And when I look at my work and what we do day to day, I often ask myself, is what I'm about to go into the third part of my race? And if so, who do you need to help you? How do you get through that? Okay. And I've always asked my questions. What do I like about certain? And it doesn't matter to, I like getting connections, relationships. I'll start it off, but then I need that next person to take it from there. And then I'll come back towards the end and help if I need to, because I'm really good at it. So I always look at things. What's that third part? Who do I need in that third section of that race, right, to help me? And that's because I know my weakness. And so that's where I love best, is because I work with a great team of people. We have some awesome individuals at our company, and I love working with them every single day. And to me, that is the most gratifying deal. And the thing I enjoy the most is calling people and saying, hey, thank you. I remember the first bonus check I gave out. I started crying. I started crying. Because I'm getting teary eyed right now, because it means so much to me. Because growing up with a family without means, you know, given a, you know, $5,000 bonus, it's a lot. It's a lot of money. And I think about my mom, if she got a $5,000 bonus, what would that mean to us? And that to me is the most gratifying deal of helping somebody else, helping somebody to make their dreams happen, to surprise them, to give them that gift, to give them this idea of like, hey, thank you, I appreciate you. It doesn't always have to be money. It can be an act of service. It can be a compliment. It can be a, hey, you know what? You've done so well. Take the day off. Here's an extra PTO day. Go spend time with your family. Thank you. You worked hard. Go do it. That's what I enjoy the most, is giving.
I absolutely loved that answer right there. Unfortunately, the back end of that question is, what do you enjoy the least?
It's all the details sometimes. So it's that third lap. And, you know, look, I'll be the first one to tell you, and Jen will tell you as well, sometimes I'm nice to a fault, and people can take advantage of that. And I think starting out in this company and even other companies, people have known that I'm a giver, I'm a nice person. And sometimes people take advantage of that. And, you know, that's the least thing I love about my job, is, you know, realizing, hey, someone's taking advantage of my giving nature, of being nice, and they're trying to prey on that. And, you know, sometimes you got to make tough decisions. And some of those tough decisions have to be made, but that also comes with the responsibility that I have. And so making those tough decisions for the company, even though you may love the person or love the idea or love the thing that's happening, maybe you have to stop it. Right. And you got to be the bearer of bad news. Everybody loves great news, but hates terrible news. And I'll tell you what, one of our, the guy, one of the individuals that sits on our board, his name is Jim Watt, and unbelievable individual. He's from Houston, kind of like what I view him as, kind of like that Houston cowboy, you know, got his hands dirty, understands grit, understands hard work, but also understands that gentleness, the kindness that can occur and will occur. And he made an important comment to me. He goes, Jared, good news can wait. Bad news, you need to say right away. Right. And that stuck with me. And so I've realized there, you know, delivering bad news or what may be considered bad news to you, that's hard because no one likes to do it. But I've gotten better at it. And that, you know, that's the least part. That's the thing I enjoy least is, you know, bad news, but I've embraced it. You know, people talk about embracing the suck, embracing the crappiness sometimes we have to go through. And I'm a faithful person, God-fearing person. And I've always said, look, every time you're down, it's, you know, do you get back up? And I tell my team here, everyone has the permission to fail, but the obligation to learn. And so, you know, other people said it quite better than that. And I forget who actually first coined that phrase, but definitely didn't come from me. But I loved it. And that's where anytime there's bad news, I learn from it. I learn from it. And so, yeah, that's what I enjoy least. And, you know, quite honestly is because I want to make people happy. I want to make people feel secure, feel safe. But you know what? That's part of the process.
I absolutely loved that answer right there. Now, Jared, this next question is my absolute favorite. And that is, do you think that grades mattered in school for the success that you have in your career today?
You know, that's a tricky question. I think at the first start about, I think most people would say, yeah, grades matter. Absolutely. To me, look, if you tried your best, if you can look in the mirror and say, I did everything I could to make the grade I made and did my best. I did everything I could do to perform at my best, whether that's grades or school performance, right? If look, some people are naturally gifted to get great grades, but they suck at business. Some people suck at grades, but they're the best business people. Right. And sometimes we just have to figure out where are we? Some people are great test takers. Some people aren't. I'm not a great test taker. But I think what's more important to me is the work ethic behind it. Look, if you made C's and you slouched and got by, that's your own fault, dude. You're not living to your potential. Because we all know, look, you want to go to college? Great. What do you want to go to the best college? Awesome. What kind of grades do you got? Because we all know that's what you need to get in. What are you doing to prep for the test? Look, some people aren't good test takers. Okay, so still go get good grades. Right? But it's the performance behind it. If someone comes into me and says, hey, listen, I wasn't the best student because you know, I'm not a very good test taker, but I can see that they have great work ethic. Maybe they did some activities, school activities, sports activities. And look, you know, let's say you take let's use track and field example, or cross country. You got someone that runs really fast, has done really well. They've succeeded. They've won their in high school, their districts, their regionals, their states. And then you look at their grades and maybe it's a B's or C's or maybe a couple of A's. That should tell you something. Well, if the guy or girl is running so well, you know, they train all the time because otherwise they wouldn't succeed. So their work ethic's there. So there's something else going on. Are they not a good, are they just not a good, do they not fit in the school system? Right? Maybe they're in the wrong school. Maybe they just don't, maybe he doesn't under or she doesn't understand the topics. But so I guess at the end of the day, to answer the question, yes, they are important. They are important. But to me, what's more important is what's the work ethic behind it. And I take that from personal experience because look, in law school, I wasn't that great at law school. Right? I wasn't on law review. I wasn't on the second tier law review. Hell, I wasn't even on the third tier law review. Right. And I made C's in law school, also made B's, and also amjured tax classes. But I was still a lawyer. Right. I passed the bar exam. That was good. But to me, what I tried to distinguish myself as is, look, hard work, ethics, working day and night, you know, that, and working smart, I'll outwork anybody. I'll outwork anybody. You want to go toe to toe on that? Sure. I may not be the smartest person, but I'll tell you what, I'm going to work longer and harder than you, and I'm going to get more accomplished in 24 hours than you ever dream about.
I absolutely love that answer right there, Jared. I absolutely love that answer right there. And I think a lot of people are going to take a lot away from that answer. Now, I'm going to break down this next question just a little bit for you, just because this word gets tossed around a little willy-nilly, and that is, what do you feel that your impact is? And when I say impact, I mean, what are you devoted to? What is your devotion?
Well, number one, family. So everything I do is for my family. You know, and it's funny having two kids, like, oh, you're working all the time. Yeah, I am. I work for my family. Trying to put us in a better position, because growing up without means, I don't want them to grow up without means. I want them to be in a better position. So everything I do is for my family. So that's really outside of work. I'm a giver. I want to give people and share experiences with others, because that's what you remember at the end of the day. I can remember experiences 20 years ago. What a great experience that was. You know, that's what I want to do to make an impact, is if I can create an experience for someone, that'll last with them for a lifetime. Right. So, but that's what I'm focused on. And outside of work, as well as inside of work. Right. So when I think about Work Shield, look, we've gotten calls that there's some amazing things that are going on with companies and this culture movement, this DE&I movement, this idea of being heard, right? Employers want to succeed. They want to give a safe space for their employees to work within. And sometimes they just don't know how. And being able to get a call from somebody and listen to them share their feelings, their anxiety, their resentment, contentment. Hey, this is going on. Does my company really care about me? And being able to have them experience that, that voice on the other side with our company and say, we hear you, we see you, we understand this is hard. And we also understand you need resolution. And so does the company. And knowing that if that happened on Monday, by Friday, that whole situation is going to be solved. And then getting a call back from that employee to the company that says, hey, I just want to say thank you because you took that fear away. You allowed me to be psychologically safe in raising my voice and knowing that the issue was going to be heard. It was going to be looked into. It was going to be a clear path to resolution, and they feel happy. Because now they don't have to worry about that fear of ridicule, that fear of retaliation, and that's okay. That is that experience that is 10 times more valuable than anything else. Because guess what? Who does that person go tell? They tell their friends. Work Shield's awesome. Who does that employer tell? Because employers are having a very tough time right now, a very tough time identifying Great resignation. What is that? And Brené Brown did it best. It's not a great resignation. It's based on the great toxicity that is in the cultures where people are resigning from. And so how do you address that great toxicity? And that's, to me, that experience to where if we can remove that toxicity from every single company, we've done our job.
I absolutely love that answer right there. Now, Jared has been answering these questions absolutely perfectly all interview long, but unfortunately, we are down to that last question, and that is if there was one. Just one piece of advice for somebody out there listening right now who wants to be in the position that you are in today, Jared, what would that be?
You know, at the end of the day, it comes down to controlling what you can control and not worrying about anything else. But there's a quote that I always love and I always go back to it. And it's regarding how do you dare greatly? And I mentioned her name earlier, Brené Brown, and she wrote a book called Dare to Leave. And there's a quote that she put in there by Theodore Roosevelt. And I'll read it to you. And every time I read it, I get a little choked up. So I'm going to tell you this right now. So if I get a little choked up because it means so much to me. But Theodore Roosevelt said, look, it is not the critic who counts, not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes short again and again, who at the best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at the worst, if he fails, he at least fails while daring greatly. And so the best piece of advice is dare greatly. And if you fail, that is okay because you are in the arena. And there's a lot of people, there's a ton of people who want to be in that arena, but they can't because you know why? They do not dare greatly.
And folks, please have the courage to start wherever you are. Have the courage to get out there and do exactly what you dare to do. And I absolutely loved that answer right there. Now, again, Jared has been answering these questions absolutely perfectly all interview long. But Jared, I'm not gonna lie. I need one more thing from you before you go. I don't care if it's a website. I don't care if it's a social media link. I don't even care if it's a book, something that I can leave down in the link in the description below so that my audience can reach yours. Please, please, please promote and shout it out now.
Look, I encourage you, like, you want to reach me, go to www.workshield.com, find us on LinkedIn, shoot me a note. My content is out there. My contact information is out there on LinkedIn. I'm always a fan of giving back and sharing experiences. So whether you're high school, college, post-college, you need someone to talk to, want some advice, I'm here. Give me a buzz. All my contact information is on LinkedIn. It's also on my website. Workshield.com, and go dare greatly.
And hit that link down in the description below. This is called the YI Network for a reason. Jared is putting his information out there on the line for all of you guys who need his help. Please hit that link in the description below and reach out to Jared. Check him out. Check out that workshield.com website. And now, folks, as you know, there are three types of work: a job, a career, and a calling. Most people have a job. You're lucky if you find a career, but you are truly, truly blessed if you find your calling. And I really hope that me and Jared helped you find it here today, folks. That is a wrap. And we interrupt this programming with a word from our sponsors. Now, a lot of people ask me, Kojo, you've helped me figure out how to do this, that, and the other. But what about starting my own podcast like you? Well, I'm finally sharing my secret. Buzzsprout is hands down the easiest and best way to launch, promote, and track your podcast. Your show can be online and listed in all major podcast directories like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and more within minutes of finishing your recording. Podcasting isn't hard when you have the right partners, and the team at Buzzsprout is passionate about helping you succeed. Join over 100,000 podcasters already using Buzzsprout to get their message out to the world by hitting our affiliate link down below. Now, don't miss out on this limited time offer. Sign up and live your dream job too. Now back to the podcast. If you like today's episode, make sure to follow the YI Network on Instagram for daily quotes from your favorite episodes and more. And if today's podcast helped you in any type of way, make sure not to thank me, but thank God. God put me on the right track at the right time to provide you guys with this content through me. And I pray that this episode helps you align with your purpose so that you too may help others. So stay blessed and stay safe. And until next time, guys.
What am I willing to do to go get it? I push things aside just to go get it. I know my role and I play my position. You talking too much. Please learn how to listen. I never give up. I'm not quitting. I'm persistent.